All right, welcome back. Another exciting show of The Big Ticket Life, where leaders are sharing all their amazing stories of healing, impact, how they're leading others as living examples of courage, and showing those they lead to do the same at home and at work. Listen, I love that you're here for the show. I want you to know where you can get it. Live here on social media, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn. We go out on all the podcast players. So whichever one's your favorite, look us up, give us a follow, give us a like, give us a subscribe, wherever you're picking this up. And if you want to get the TV experience from the sofa, right? Get that cushy, immersive experience. You can watch Big Ticket Life now on DBTV, which is an up-and-coming streaming TV network chock full of amazing shows, something for everybody. Check us out on DBTV. Michael Levitt, welcome to the show. Happy to have you here as today's guest.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to our conversation, Jeff.
Yeah, for sure. So right off the top, you know, reviewing your information you sent over about being on the show, I've never seen this before. CBT and NLP therapist. Tell me about that.
When I started my work in working with individuals and teams on burnout prevention, ends up being burnout recovery typically, but when I started doing this work, I kept finding time and time again, a lot of the issues that those individuals and teams were facing were based on their beliefs, their thought patterns, the language they use both externally and the language they use internally in their head. So I started researching it a little bit more and I thought, okay, and I had worked in healthcare earlier in my career, so I was familiar with both premises and decided, you know what, why don't I dig into this a little bit more and see if it could be helpful, not only for myself as an individual, but just in working with people and just getting a better understanding why people do what they do, why they feel the way they feel, and help them kind of change the perspective on things. So that's why I decided to get certified in both of those therapies. And it's been really, really helpful to deal with people in just day-to-day life.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe I missed it. CBT stands for what again?
Cognitive Behavioral Therapy.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So the things you tell yourself, that self-talk that you say, think either out loud or to yourself, that really kind of program the dial on the outcome of your day.
Absolutely.
Can you walk us through a couple examples of maybe some things, maybe not name names or name companies, but, you know, speak to it in a generalization of, you know, you come across somebody and they don't even realize how they're speaking to themselves. Can you share a couple examples?
Yeah. Yeah. There's one example I love sharing, and it was with an individual, and I've got permission to share the story. I don't identify who they are, but
sure.
They were in a relatively new leadership role, and they had replaced somebody in that organization that was loved, and the board of directors decided to go in a different direction. Sent that person on the way. They brought in this individual and eager, you know, wanting to, you know, basically set the tone and, you know, put their fingerprints on things. You know, made some decisions early on that was a bit rushed, to say the least. And they had reached out to me, and I had some conversations with them, and you know, I was asking them, so, okay, why is this important for you to implement this? You know, what are you trying to accomplish? And time again, what we find is it's a combination of wanting to prove yourself, wanted to make sure that they look good in front of the board. So what happens is our ego gets in the way, and that happens to all of us. You know, we want to look good. There's nothing wrong with that per se, but when you don't factor in all the other impacts that your actions and behaviors and thoughts and language create, you can create some divisive moments. And, you know, thankfully, it did at first create a pretty big situation. And the board had to do a little bit of damage control, as did she. And we talked it through, and thankfully the board was supportive and understanding, you know, what, you know, the motivation was behind it. But they said, okay, we got to go a little slower next time. And, you know, key thing that I talked to them about was, okay, you need to open things up and not feel that you have to be the one leading everything. Yes, you are the leader, but you need input from your team, because mm-hmm. if you don't have your team with you, you don't have a team, and you're going to have nothing but a tough hill to climb, and it'll eat you alive, and you're not going to want to do that. So start, gaining the trust of these people. And that's not something that's overnight. Just, implement some things that they want, give them a say, let them know, not just feel, but know that they do have a voice in how the organization is ran. Obviously, you have to make decisions that may not be popular, but as long as they have input, it's going to make a big difference in their life. And using, CBT and NLP in those examples, I didn't pull out the checklist per se. And so, okay, let's go through this and this, because it wasn't a therapy session. It was more of a mentoring session, but I utilized different tools from all of those things to help flush those things out and help them see things from a different perspective. And when people change their perspective, a lot of times how they look at things change.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I mean, I think the crux of that whole example, is understood when the leader came in and said, I've got to put my fingerprint on this thing, which means, fingerprint is as unique as DNA. DNA is a carbon copy of one of 8 billion plus people at this point on this earth. And so I feel if you're putting your fingerprint on things, it's like, it's going to be your way or the highway, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to isolate things, especially early on. I know some organizations, when they bring in a new leader, and we've seen it, and especially public facing companies, they clean house, they bring in their own people, which you could argue for and against, but ultimately they're bringing in people that they know and like and trust, and they want their team there. And I get it. It makes a lot of sense, but sometimes that's problematic because you're getting rid of historical knowledge. You're also potentially diminishing the opportunity of growing the company even more, because you may have an all-star that's already on that team. You don't know it because you're not giving them an opportunity to thrive.
Yeah. Yeah. Early on, when I was a kid, high school, I didn't have any direction. I went to mechanic class my senior year of high school because I liked fast cars. And I had all my credits in and I was done with school. And I graduated as a mechanic and I worked at a dealership for a little bit after high school. And there was a sales guy, Ruben Zeisset. And Ruben, who's long since passed, this guy was the top dog sales guy. And they constantly messed with him. Ruben was its top dog sales guy because he had this little recipe box looking thing, like that your grandma would have. 3x5 index cards. He carried this thing around like it was an extension of his body, right? Like it grew out of his forearm, basically. Within that recipe box, you could probably imagine what was in there.
All the information about all of his customers.
Yep.
Their birthdays, wedding anniversaries, birthdays of their kids, the car that they bought, when they bought it, any other life events, trips, anything like that. And it reminds me, ironically, of a salesperson that my dad bought. I don't count how many cars he bought from Rick, but this was back in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. Rick was the only salesperson at the dealership that had a computer. It was his own computer. It was a laptop computer. Mm-hmm. He paid thousands of dollars.
Yeah, back then.
Those were those big, heavy bricks that you could use as a cement block. They were heavy. And he used, pretty sure it was probably Lotus 1-2-3 or one of the early spreadsheet programs. And he had this custom built database that he had created himself of all that information about his people. And he just worked it like a Rolodex, and he would sort it and be able to say, okay, it's April. All right. We're going to call Denny and we're going to ask him, how his trip in March was to Barbados, or how's the Chevy doing? Okay. I see there's a recall that is coming out. They haven't announced it yet, but why don't we get you in now before, the mass load of people show up? Those types of things. And Dad bought from him for years. He wouldn't even bother going to shop around or look at other dealers. No, I'm just going to buy it from Rick. That's one customer. He had hundreds and thousands of names on this list. And the other salesperson, other salespeople there were all laughing and pointing, look at him, he's playing a computer, look at him. And what was he doing? He was schooling all of them and outselling them probably 5-1 on any given day. Well, as soon as they started getting wind all of that, you know, they were all begging him, show us how to do that. And they wanted to bring in their own computers and all that, of course. Now everything's computerized, yeah. But he was way ahead of the game, but it boiled down to being good with people and understanding those little things. And those little things people notice, they remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I bring up Ruben, and thanks for sharing about Rick. Sounds like they could be brothers, right? Yeah, I brought up Ruben because sales manager after sales manager would chase two people off the lot. The detail guys, for some reason, they rode the detail guys like crazy. I don't know why. That wasn't my thing, but I never saw them like screwing off. What they did to the cars to make them look incredible, the pre-owned ones. To this day, I still marvel at what they do. Actually just helped my wife out yesterday or Sunday afternoon. I cleaned her car for her. And I was reminded of that time. And they'd mess with the sales guys and they would chase Ruben away from his desk. Remember, this is like 98, late 97. So we don't really have the internet yet. Cell phones, if you had one, the minute's super expensive. And so they chase them off the desk and this guy's just dialing. They wanted these guys out networking. They wanted these guys, you know, out for lunch if it was a middle of the week. They don't want 5-6 guys on the lot middle of the week because you're just not going to get that many people. Ruben ended up going up to the mechanics break room where we had the phone that was really more internal. It wasn't hooked up for external. Like Rick buying his own computer, Ruben paid the telephone company to come in and hook up an external line. And he'd go hot. And eventually Ruben quit and went to another dealership. Why? Because every one of those sales managers had to put their own fingerprint. And he took all that production and all the cars. And eventually that lot closed because they just couldn't keep it going. And Ruben was the guy. They cut the specialness out.
And we see that time and time again. And that's why when we counter special experiences, it doesn't matter. It can be at a coffee shop or buying a product or a service. Just that I actually feel like a human being dealing with these people. Mm-hmm. It goes above and beyond. And just having a conversation, and I see this a lot, and it really frustrates me, is when customers are rude to the service people. So I go above and beyond and make sure that, good morning, how are you? How's your day? I might make a comment about the store, what's going on in the weather, you know, small talk more or less. But if there's something they notice that is in, you know, something that they would like to discuss or something they're interested in, then I will, you know, just to kind of, right. You know, break yeah. that barrier and say, hey, we're all humans here. We're all trying to navigate this thing called life to the best of our ability. And how can we do it where we take the pressure off? A quick side story has really nothing to do with anything. I was walking, there's a mall across the street from me. And one day I was walking over there and it looked like there was a piece of broken scaffolding or something that was on the sidewalk. And I looked at it and I picked it up. It was, you know, aluminum, a small piece. So I was able to bend it a little bit and I put it in the trash can. There was a gentleman that was behind me. I didn't know he was there. He goes, excuse me. And he had a really strong French accent. And all he said to me in his English, which was a bit broken, says, I'm glad to see that there are still gentlemen in this world. So it kind of goes back to Chris's comment earlier mm-hmm. in the pre-show about calling me a gentleman. I didn't do it for any type of acknowledgement. I wasn't, hey, let's see. I just did it because it was the right thing to do. Yeah. And I think if anything in life, if we can do the right thing, just do the right thing. It's going to yeah. make things a whole lot better. It's going to help you with stress. It's going to help you prevent burnout. It's going to help you be a better person. You're going to be a better role model in your company. It's like, you know, Ruben was. He was a role model. And I hope that there was some salespeople there that noticed what he was doing and said, you know, I need to mimic that because that guy's successful.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, on the note of fueling yourself with goodness, which is what that moment was with the gentleman who acknowledged that good deed that you did. You know, this morning I dropped my son off at school. He's in early on Tuesdays and Thursdays for football lineman exercises and workouts. And I head to Wawa for coffee. And here in Pennsylvania, Wawa is pretty well known. And they got a big coffee bar. And, you know, for me with my life, I'm really not under the gun of a schedule per se. I don't have to report to work for anybody at any time. I'm always on time for my podcast show, of course, because I'm responsible to my watchers and listeners. But at 6:30 in the morning, no rush. Well, I felt I cut the line. There was a nurse at the hospital where my father-in-law just left. We've since moved him into hospice care. And I noticed it on her uniform that she was in, she was definitely on the floor where my father-in-law was. I didn't recognize her as a nurse, but I just said, "Hey, I'm sorry. I cut the line. I didn't really do it intentionally, but I can see you work at the hospital. You guys are great on that floor. My father-in-law was just there. He's since moved on. But look, thanks for all your work. I'm so sorry that I took your time like that." And she said, "Oh, you're fine." But it was that interaction. There was a smile on her face. Her whole body language changed. And in the context of burnout, if we don't look as leaders for those little moments, what are we really doing? If we don't look for context and opportunity to make impact, do we open up ourselves to an immense amount of burnout? I guess let's kind of pick up on the title of the show and what you really do well for people with that said.
Yeah. And burnout's one of those things that it doesn't care what level you are in an organization. You can be front lines. You can be in the C-suite, everywhere in between. Doesn't care. It will hit you if you don't take the steps to prevent it. And using the World Health Organization, who we've heard from a bit over the last few years, before the pandemic, can you say that word, pandemic? I think you can. Anyway, before that fun event, they had actually issued a definition for burnout. They called it a workplace phenomenon. They didn't classify it as a disease, but it is under an ICD code, which is usually reserved for diseases. So I think there's additional work to be done in research on it. I don't think they'll ever classify it necessarily as a disease, but who knows? But long story short, they say burnout is... it happens after prolonged stress. You're unable to meet the demands of life. You're overwhelmed. You're fatigued. You're mentally drained. You're physically drained. You're a mess. And it doesn't happen overnight. It can happen quick for some people. Sometimes it might take a little bit longer. But for leaders, what I see a lot is, especially type A personalities, but it's not exclusive to those types of individuals, but what I see a lot is people will overwhelm themselves with good things. These are good things to do. Okay, yes, I've got the podcast. Yes, I do writing. Yes, I do this. Yes, I speak. Yes, we do that. Or if you're running the C-suite, yep, I'm doing this. I'm on 6 boards of directors. I'm coaching my kids' football team. My daughter's in recital. I take her to practice 5 times a week. Mm-hmm. I have a wife. I cook dinner. And all of a sudden, you're looking going, I want that clock that you operate on, because obviously you have more than 24 hours working for you. Well, how do you do that? And they don't. So what happens, of course, is they sacrifice other things. They sacrifice their self-care time. And my definition of self-care is doing things in life you enjoy doing, and resting and leisure and all that. That's self-care. And what happens when we work too much, we cut those things out. And it will catch up with you eventually. It always does. I'm speaking at a conference in a couple of weeks, and it's a orthodontist conference. So it's like, okay, hopefully I don't get sold braces, but maybe I will. We'll see. But at the end of the day, a recent study of just orthodontists, just that particular sector, 74% identify as either being moderately stressed or extremely stressed.
I was just going to say, and you may know this, if you don't, I'm happy to share this out, this nugget, but disproportionately in medical profession, dentists and orthodontists have the highest suicide rate. I've been told this.
Yeah.
I have friends that serve, marketing services. I have a number of friends that serve marketing services to that community. And, it's a real thing, this burnout, to the point of they end their life. I can't imagine doing that for a career.
Yeah, and it's alarming, and it's it's frustrating because I think back to, you know, my mom used to work for a dentist decades ago. This was before I was born, but he was our dentist, you know, for when I was a kid and all of that. And his demeanor and talking with mom never really changed. He was as cool as a cucumber. And most of the dentists that I've dealt with in my life, my current one's a little high strung, but she's a spark plug. So that's just her natural instinct. But for most of them, you know, about as exciting as a warm glass of milk. And you could tell that they weren't, you know, acting, that that's just who they were. So when you hear those stats at first, you know, for me, I would be alarmed, but working in the industry that I do and working with the people that I do, I'm not shocked. And it's, and a lot of it comes down to just, there's a lot of factors involved with it. One, especially if they're recently graduated, they've got student loans. So they're looking at that big number and, you know, when they have commas in your loan, it's not good. You've got operating a practice, which
tremendous cost of payroll, hard cost of, place of business, equipment.
Yeah. The equipment, the overhead. And then of course, toss in the pandemic, you know, and the dental industry and orthodontics, you know, they had a leg up, on sterilization and keeping things clean because they're playing in your mouth. So they've been for a long time, you know, really hygienic on that, but they even then had to amp up some of the things that they do. Even, you know, my dentist, they switched to voice activated, you know, lights. So when they turn on the light to, you know, basically look in your mouth and stuff, they're not touching anything. It's all, you know, voice controlled or on their app on their phone. So they've invested. That's not $10. Okay. I know that costs a whole lot more. So they're constantly putting in these capital investments. They can only charge so much because dental is one of those things that most insurance doesn't pay everything. So it's out of pocket, and people with inflation and everything else, it tends to be one of those things where they put it off. It's like, yeah, I know I need to get a cleaning. I'll go do that.
And dental, the frustrating thing for the folks you're going to be talking to in a few weeks is they know it. You probably know it. I know it. Dental is like the gateway. It's the toll booth to a healthy life. If your teeth are bad, you're more likely to have heart disease. You know, if your teeth are bad and you've had other surgical procedures or you got hardware in, you could generate a bacterial infection through a molar. And all of a sudden that knee replacement that you got, which I did a year, 15 months ago, goes bad because your body starts to reject. Like your mouth is, so your mouth is that toll booth to good health. And these folks know it, but they don't get the respect of it. So they're trying harder to push forward faster. And then they're just tied to this chair.
Yeah. They're tied to the chair. They, you know, overbook themselves. Of course, you know, think about it too. You know, most people are like, well, I can't go to the dentist at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm working. So what happens? They want to do it at night. Yeah. So the dentists are working these odd shifts. So maybe Mondays and Tuesdays, they do the 9 to 5 thing. And then Wednesdays and Fridays. And then on the weekend, they're working either evening or early morning or something like that.
Yeah.
Any of us that have ever done any type of shift work, our body does not like that. We like routines. We like rhythm. So if you're working a morning shift and then the next day you're working the night shift, your body's going, dude, what's up? You know, why are you doing this to me? So you can't just adjust on that. So they're fighting that. They've got the worries about the financial situation, staffing, retention, recruitment, then the nightmare of dealing with insurance companies and all of that. It's a headache role.
Yeah.
It really is. And I think a lot needs to be done to help these professionals so they don't have to worry about that kind of stuff as much. And there's a lot of ways to approach it. But ultimately, I want our dentists and our doctors and our orthodontists to focus on what they went to school for, to work on oral health or physical health or mental health, depending on their profession, or lawyers or accountants or teachers. I want them to be in their sweet spot working. And what happens is because of all these other things that are keep getting piled on their to-do list, they can't. So they're overwhelmed, and that turns into stress, and prolonged stress is what turns into burnout.
Yeah. Yeah. It really can. And it really does. There's two things I want to touch on. So we'll get to this second, but it is, because we'll probably spend a lot of time on this point, allowing yourself to have that self-care time guilt-free. Okay, so let's talk about that in a few minutes. But you touched on something that is a phenomenon that one of my business partners brought to me. He coaches his son's youth baseball team. And he saw me for 7 years bring my stresses and struggles of the local youth football team board work that I did, right? As both a coach and a board member, I was like really insane. I said, don't do it. The first time he did it, well, he went and did it, and he's done it again and again. Here's the phenomena he brought, and he's shared with me. Parents are now signing children up for youth sports. They'll sign up in the spring for soccer, for baseball, for basketball, because they don't want to make their child commit to one sport for one season, because what if they don't like it? They're going to let little Johnny, little Susie quit and move on. And I bring this up because you got these parents flying here, there, and everywhere to appease a child, in my opinion, giving them no life building skills at all, showing them this path of immense, it's not even ease, because ease is a mastery skill that we'll go into the second point I wanted to talk about carefree or guilt-free self-care. It's I guess, this cushy existence of coddling. And they make it the coaches and the youth team board's responsibility to appease their schedules. Well, we can't come. Can you change the practice? Because we have basketball that night. What?
Yep.
What say you?
Life example for you on this one. And I see this a lot. And it's one of those, I don't want to call it a pet peeve, but it bugs the crap out of me when I see parents doing this, because it's causing some significant damage for their child. Mm-hmm. I understand the interest. Okay, yes, we want them to get exposed in all the different activities so they can choose.
Sure.
But this is a real case point. This was before the pandemic. I was taking some bass guitar lessons. You can probably see the neck of the bass guitar behind me. And I was at a music shop. It was on a Wednesday night. And this dad came in. And this dad was the poster child of stress. And I'm not being judgmental, but just observing him was, you know, significantly overweight, stressed, on his phone all the time. And he was dropping off his, you know, son to, basically, I think he was playing drums that night. It was piano one night, drums the other night. And basically, he needed to reschedule the piano lesson because they had him in hockey practice that night, that the piano lesson was. It took the dad and the office manager, because I looked at my watch after a while, it took them 15 minutes to narrow down a time where this kid could come and make up the missing piano lesson class, because all of those nights, something was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was basketball practice, this, tutoring, math, this. And I'm getting dizzy just listening to this.
Yeah.
And it boils down, I'm going to simplify it as much as I can. Parents, you need to let your kids be bored. They don't know how to be bored. They're constantly doing and getting stimulated and coddled. And what that is doing, and we're going to see it if we're not already are seeing it in the workforce, we definitely will see it once these kids start entering the workforce, is they need to be constantly stimulated, and work sometimes doesn't do that. And these kids are going to have mental breakdowns. They're going to quit. They're like, I'm not being fulfilled. I don't feel, the mission that I want to accomplish in life. I'm not accomplishing what I want to accomplish. I'm like, I was happy to get a paycheck so I could go to Windsor when I was 19,
yeah,
as we were talking about in the pre-show. I'll let people Google that and what we were doing. But yeah, statute of limitations, people. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
A lot more hair ago too, but I see this all the time. It's like, well, I've got this, I got to take them this and this. I'm like, do they have time to be bored? And do they have time to actually do their homework? Do they have time to play and create?
Well,
and
that's,
go ahead.
That's it. That's what you're saying. You're not saying make your kids bored from not having a schedule, not having every moment of every waking hour planned and accounted for, and moreover, tracked, which is a whole other problem. You know, when we were growing up, you left the house in the morning with your friends, you jumped on your bike, and you were home at dinner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In essence, we were bored, but we filled the day with discovery.
We created.
Yes.
We researched. We discovered.
Yes.
We would get yelled at if we came back in the house during the day. I don't know what my parents were doing. I don't want to even think about that. But they're both long past.
What are all our parents doing?
Yeah,
wait a minute.
Exactly.
They were all like
that. Yeah, I know. It's like, whoopsie, what do you get out of here? It's like, oh, geez. Whoops. Okay, so that's how we were made. But anyway, what, you know, we get yelled at. What are you doing here? I need to get a cup of water. Drink from the hose. You know, it's like, literally, they did not want us in the house. And now it's like, you know, it's the opposite. It's like, you know, get back in here. It's like, well, wait a minute. And I think about one of the movies that, you know, we were talking about earlier. I know Chris has said, don't talk so much about the pre-show stuff, but we were talking about dumb movies.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this movie was dumb, but it was a conversation my wife and I had at the store this past weekend, and somehow we got on the subject of the movie Waterworld. And I don't know. I don't even remember how it came up, but it's like, we should watch that. That's a good, you know, 2 hours that we'll never get back. It's like, let's just do that, because we'll do that from time to time. So we went to go and all that stuff. And it wasn't on any of the streaming channels. You could rent it from, you know, one of the places, but it wasn't on streaming. I'm like, you're kidding me. That movie's, you know, 95. It's like, you can't just, you know, play it on Netflix or something.
Yeah, that should be on like 7 channels for free.
I was going to say, that should be on Pluto TV, should have that. Mm-hmm. Come on, you know, so it's like, but it wasn't. And I'm like, she's like, oh, it's, you know, like this to rent. And like, and I said, rent it. You know, so she did it. I said, here's some money, just rent it. So we watched it, and it wasn't as bad as the first time I saw it, but it was, again, just one of those things where it's like, that was not on our schedule. That was just, well, I'll do something different. Throw it out. Our kids are not being allowed to just explore. And that's causing them stress because they're overstimulated and overcommitted. Yeah. And that's going to be a huge, huge problem. That's why we're seeing so many young adults having cardiac events. It's like, it's horrible to see, you know, people under age 40 literally having heart attacks. It's like, that's not good.
It's not. You know, you said, you know, when you got home in the afternoon, you said, I need a drink of water. Mom says, drink from the hose. Well, you might think that was just like, well, yeah, that's what we did, but that doesn't apply today and to stress and to burnout, but it 100% does, because you've got kids in, you know, high school. High school is my frame of reference right now for kids in school, because that's where my youngest son is. My other one graduated 2 years ago. But you've got kids in high school now that can't drink water without participating in the social hierarchy of Stanley flasks and mugs. Oh, I'm sorry, Jackie. You don't have the $150 Taylor Swift red thing. That's bye-bye. This is the world we're creating. This is 100% appropriate to burnout. We're forcing and teaching our people and ourselves to live within these constraints of these things and these expectations.
Yeah, no, we thank are. You. Yeah, and it's frustrating. And my kids are all adults now, and my middle daughter, you know, it had that kind of mindset wanting these things. It's like, well, if you want, you know, when you get a job, you can buy some of those things. Yes, I'll give you some things for gifts, you know, for around the holidays and whatnot. But no, you don't need that. And it was one of those things that I tried to instill. And I think this is from Warren Buffett. And before I continue, this is not investment advice. This is just a comment. Okay. So don't take this for like, it's like for all those things that people see, oh, we got to get the latest Stanley mug or Stanley cup, and, you know, spending time in Canada, Stanley Cup means one thing. It's something the Maple Leafs haven't seen since 1967. At least they tied it up last night. So, there's still hope, but a pessimist is an optimist with experience. So we'll go with that. But one of the things, I think it was Warren Buffett that said this, or somebody paraphrasing him, said, okay, when you see something like that, where there's just like huge demand for this infamous thing that's on TikTok or Instagram or whatnot, instead of buying that thing, maybe invest in the stock of the company that's doing that. Because if their sales are going up, guess what? You're going to make a profit. You could probably buy three or four of the things based on the profit that you made from that stock. Again, not stock advice, not giving you any type of investment advice, work with your investment broker, but just an observation in life. If you're looking for opportunities, that's one of them. And it's like, if people do that, then I'm like, because for me, it's like, I'll go to the dollar store. Okay. It's BPA free. Okay. Whatever that means. Okay. It works. Does it spill? No. Good. Does it keep my coffee warm? Yes. Winning. Okay. Let's go. But you know, it's all the time. And it said, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, that old phrase, but now it's keeping up with the influencers. And I have to have this. My life will not be complete without this. I'll be, because kids are rude and they poke fun at people and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, your self-confidence and your self-worth is so much more important than what anybody else says about you. Who cares? But it takes a long time to get to that point. I know.
Yeah, it does. It does. Well, I mean, even this medium that we're on right now, you know, a podcast show, there's all the dogma about what is and what isn't a podcast. Should I have video? Should I not have? You know, should it be live? Should it be pre-recorded? Should I do one? Should I commit? And the questions that people don't ask is, what's my purpose? You know, for me, my show is a long game about creating an immense content library where I get found, where people are magnetically attracted to me and the work that I do. That's my end goal. And if you're just constantly going to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, you don't get the time to think about that. So I said, I want to talk about this thought of giving yourself time, that carefree, guilt-free self-care. Do you find, I know for me, I struggled with this a long time, pulling away, unplugging and not feeling bad about it was a real problem for me.
It's a big problem for most people, and including myself. Even after my own burnout journey and recovering from it and learning about it and what to do and what not to do, there's still that element of, well, they're depending on me. And it's like, okay, yeah, they might be depending on you, but they need to depend on a healthy version of you, not a worn out, completely defeated, no fuel left in the tank you. That's not helping anybody. So you have to prioritize, and I like using the phrase harmonize your life, you know, work-life balance. I don't like the word balance. And even in my slide decks, I'll put down work-life balance and I use the strike through on the word balance and I type harmony after it, because work-life balance is like trying to balance an egg. If you put an egg up and if it doesn't tip, throw that egg out because there's something wrong with it. But you
like that.
Life isn't that way. It harmonizes. There's different seasons for things. My original career, I was a public accountant, worked during tax season. So we know, you know,
every spring was a nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. It was a surefire way to blow through winter though, because you were in the office 80 hours a week. So I knew, you just knew. It's like, those are long hours. I'm burned out. You know it. It exists. So instead of complaining about it and stressing about it, you can't change it. It is 80 hours. The workload demands that. But you know that May 1st, if you're in Canada, or April 16th in the US, or wherever, you know, it happens to be the last filing day of the year, wherever you are, then you know, I can relax and take a little bit easier pace. There's going to be periods where it's busy. in some sectors, unfortunately, it just seems like it's always on and doesn't shut off. So in those situations, you have to, be prepared for that and understand, what do I need to do? If you're a nurse and you're working, a double shift, or you have to do the 24-hour thing or the 12-hour thing, you know that. So what do you do? Just like any athlete or anybody else would do, what do I need to do to prepare myself to be the best version of me so I can navigate through that 12-hour shift? What do I need to do? From eating, from resting, to movement, mindset, there's all these things. It's basically, and this is something where a lot of people struggle with, they don't have any idea who they are. They don't know how they operate. Most of the time it's on autopilot. They don't even think about it. Even this morning, case in point, I was chopping up some peppers for dinner tonight. And I grabbed a container out of the cupboard and I chopped them all up. I sealed the container. And I was about to put the container back in the container drawer. I'm glad I caught myself, because otherwise, like, what's that smell? It would be, days old peppers that are rotting away in a cupboard instead of in the refrigerator. So we get in these modes, and sometimes we have to just pause and go, okay, where am I at right now? What am I doing right now? Literally, yeah. What am I thinking about? Okay, why am I thinking? And going back to the therapy thing. Why am I thinking that? And often what happens is we get negative thoughts. We start dwelling on things that happen or are going to happen or maybe happen. And we just go down that rabbit hole. And what happens is we just spend so much time on that instead of saying, well, wait a minute, why did that thought come to me right now? What triggered me? What did I see something? Did I taste something? Did I smell something that brought that forward? And it's one of those things where I use this a lot. And I said, just approach it with a childlike curiosity. Like when you were a little kid and you're asking your parents all the questions all the time. You probably don't remember that time. And I apologize for my alarm going off. I thought I shut that off. So apologies for that.
No problem.
At least knock on wood, we didn't hear the construction noise I warned you about.
Yes, we both can knock on wood for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was noisy yesterday. But childlike curiosity. Okay, why is this thought here? Okay. Yeah. And another thing real quick, that a lot of people struggle with is, I don't like having these negative thoughts come in. It's like, this is an approach that I've recently done myself, because, I read about it in therapy. I started doing it because, I'd get thoughts on all kinds of different things that was going on in the world or personally or whatnot. When those negative thoughts come, welcome them. The reason why you want to welcome them is they're already here. They're there. Right. They're in the room. Hey, well, how's it going?
Kind of like the 80 hours for taxes, tax preparers and CPAs, and the 3 24-hour shifts a week for the nurses, right? Accept it.
You can't change it. So why are you spending all your time, being upset about trying to change something you can't change? And I think that's where a lot of people get in a lot of trouble and stress out, and the prolonged stress is what turns into burnout, is they're constantly fighting to try to change something that they don't have any control over. That they have control over their mindset around it. And I think that's when you see the differences between people and organizations, where this group of individuals are burned out and this other group that's doing similar work, they're not. And it's like, okay, what's going on here? What's the difference? A lot of times it's mindset. It's also how they live their lives. It could be genetics, maybe, but usually it's more of a mindset thing and a preparation thing, and not over committing themselves, whether it's from workloads or maybe too much debt or too many obligations outside of work. There's so many different things that can that sound good to us, and they might be really good, but you can't do everything. And when you try to, it gets you in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a conversation I had with my wife this weekend. I said, because we're approaching that 3 maybe 5 year window of what's next for us, right? Where our youngest son will be out of the house, our oldest one will be on his own, and we'll be empty nesters, and we have plans to live a more carefree life, get on the road with our RV. Steph kind of wants horses. She likes the little mini goats, and I want some land. And I said, can we be the kind of couple that maybe we aren't traveling in an RV all the time, that maybe we construct a property in which we live in the RV and we can just pull it out? Because what I don't aspire to is that big retirement home that you got to have the manicured lawn. Like, I just want to throw up thinking about paying somebody to cut grass. Because once these boys are out of the house, I got to get back to doing it. And I haven't cut grass for like a decade or more at this point. We're being very intentional about what we want and why that matters. And that's, do you feel that that's an exercise people aren't focused on enough?
Oh, yeah. And it's a beautiful exercise. And it's also one where, okay, the outcome might look a little different than you think, but it's all about the destination and the planning of that. And, you know, when your youngest moves out, you sell the house and you don't give them the new address. That's really fun for parents to do. Pro tip for everybody. Get your kid. If you want your kid, well, I say this, sometimes the kids may not care and they're like, oh, well, yeah, I don't know where they are. I don't care. But some may freak out and be like, you know, putting you on, you know, side of milk cartons and like, where's mom and dad? But just tongue in cheek, like, no, we're moving. We'll tell you. Or old WWF reference, parts unknown.
I
love that one. But having that desire and goal, and Brian Tracy, you know, and of course, Jim Rohn did it, and all the other guys, leadership gurus have all, you know, done something very similar. It's like, write down your goals. Why? Because that's what resonates with you. It's like, I want to accomplish that. What would it feel like if you accomplished that? What would it feel like if you're in your RV and you got a piece of land, you've got little goats running around, you've got some horses, and of course you have people that can help watch them when you jump in the RV to go wherever you want to go. That freedom and the flexibility is great. And if you want to continue doing the show, internet's pretty much available everywhere. So you can do that if you want. Or
Starlink is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, so you get to do all of those things and you take life at a pace that's right for you. And I always tell people this, especially for me, because I've moved around a bit and I've done different careers, is if you don't like it, you can always go back and do something different. Give yourself the permission to play, experiment. You know, I could have easily been pigeonholed in the generations of people that worked in the auto sector, because my great grandfather, my grandfather, and my dad all worked for Generous Motors. And I didn't, because my dad told me at a young age, so, you know, you're probably going to want to consider something different, because the auto sector is one that is, it's hit or miss. When it's hitting great. And when it's missing, they're closing up plants and towns are becoming ghost towns. So you got to, you know, watch what you do. I think he said that, but he also understood that I had zero mechanical skills. So he's like, don't go in this field. Yeah, maybe play with numbers, Mike. Yeah, just go do that. And, you know, it worked out well for me. So, you know, I thank my father for giving me that advice, no matter what his ulterior motive was for it. But no.
The soft hand of parental leadership. Understanding what your kids can do and can't do, and leading them to a path of where you feel they can excel. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you know, I remember I was at my aunt and uncle's and they had a huge property, and on the lower part of their yard was this wall that they had. It was, you know, with old train track wood beams and things like that. And they made kind of a wall there to kind of help off with, you know, water overflow and all that kind of stuff. And my cousin Todd and I were on a baseball team. And it was in sixth grade. So I'm there. I'm left-handed, but I throw the ball and bat and all that stuff right-handed. So dad's like, try throwing left-handed. You're left-handed. Throw left-hand. And, you know, I throw right-hand, no problem. I try to throw left-hand. It's like there's missing ligaments in my arm. It's like, you know, like that. And at that point, I think the dream of a left-handed pitcher making the big leagues died with my dad. And he was just like, believe me, I would have loved to be able to throw left-handed, because I would have worked on that, because I would have got a job, you know, maybe not long, but, you know, they're always looking for lefties, at least back in the early days of baseball. So, but yeah, I think you just got to try things, do things, experiment.
Yeah.
Mess around with life, you know, and you know, use a safety net if you want. If you're crazy like my wife, don't, but you know, it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, to put a button on that, it really means you don't have roots. You mentally plant these roots, but physically they're really not there, you know. Emotionally, you have relationships, you got friendships, you know, look, the technology we're on right now enables the ability to still stay connected to those important people. And you can be connected to them. You know, look, as we wrap up our time, you have a generous gift. You have your book, Burnout Proof. Correct?
That's correct. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. All you got to do is just go
tell
to
us about that.
Yeah, just wrote it. It's a quick read, and that's intentional. I didn't want to go Tim Ferriss' Tool of Titans length, because try carrying that book in a backpack. You're going to need a chiropractor. But it's a great book, but oh my goodness, it's thick. Where mine's a quick read, and for your listeners, give them a free digital copy of it. They just go to breakfastleadership.com/burnoutbook, enter name, enter email. As soon as you click send or give it to me or whatever the button says, after a few seconds, the book will pop up on the screen. You just click the download button and then you'll have a PDF copy in your downloads folder along with those 18,000 of other free eBooks that you've downloaded. And you know, maybe one day you'll read it, but it's intended to be a quick read. Goes through the science of burnout. It goes through why burnout's bad and some real important tips on, you know, how to prevent it and recover from it. And we talked about a lot of them today in our conversation. You know, bottom line, just live your best life. You know, make sure you're doing things in life you enjoy doing. Take some time for yourself and it'll make a big, big difference in you fighting burnout and basically becoming burnout proof.
Love it. Love the work you're doing.
Thank you.
You know, it's needed. Everybody needs to find ultimately their path to that level of freedom that they have earned, you know, right. And you can craft that and create that. And I feel it's from understanding, you know, being real clear with you and what you want out of this life. Absolutely. Michael can help you get there. If reading's not your thing, I don't know why it wouldn't be, but if it's not, you've got a really great podcast. Tell us about that, where people should subscribe and get that as well.
Yeah, on all the flavors of podcasts, it's called The Breakfast Leadership Show. And I interview amazing thought leaders from around the world. And some of the early, early episodes, there was a lot of focus on burnout. So you got to scroll back to 2017 to find those. But occasionally I'll sprinkle in one and all of that. But yeah, that's a great resource to, you know, pick up and learn some different things. And of course, you know, the website, breakfastleadership.com, blog articles and all of that as well. There's a ton of stuff on burnout and other useful tips to help your business be better or yourself be better. It's my way of giving back to people, and because I want organizations and individuals to be their best, because when they are, that means they make the best stuff so you and I can buy great stuff. So that's my motive. I want the world to be better.
Yep. Love it. Love that clarity. Michael, thank you for taking the time out of your busy day.
Thank you.
The work you do. Thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate you and all that you're doing out there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Another great show here on The Big Ticket Life. Thank you for watching wherever that might be. Again, we're live every Tuesday at noon on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube. We hit all the players the Monday after, and we get this up on DBTV. So if you're watching there, thank you. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is, wherever it is you're picking up the show. I'd love for you to do that. Look, this week ahead, live as that example of courage, right? As we said here on the show, don't plug those things in that are going to give you burnout. Unplug yourself, pick up some of those roots that are holding you back. I want you to go out there and live as an example of courage. Do it for your children, your spouse, the people you lead, the people around you. They need you more than you know. So that's my challenge to you. We'll see everybody else next week on The Big Ticket Life. Take care. You just heard another impactful show on The Big Ticket Life, challenging leaders to lead with courage and work to solve the clash that exists between those they lead and the lives they live. Now is the time to focus on leveling up the humans you lead and the impact you can create in their lives. It's time to lead with courage and be a living example of courage. I'd love for you to go to thejeffg.com/mission. That's thejeffg.com/mission right now and book a call with me to discuss how to integrate these examples of courage into your leadership, how to approach your team with vulnerability, and most importantly, so we can plan out how you'll invest and level up the humans you lead for maximum healing and impact so you can be the leader your people need every day. Visit thejeffg.com/mission. That's thejeffg.com/mission right now and book a call with me today.